Blog Talk Radio.
Francisco, and there's a lot of things going on in this town. I don't know. We sometimes think it's gotten to be bread and circuses. Anyway, some interesting birthdays today, which also tie in with Barack Obama or Barack Obama Davis. Some new allegations that Obama Sr. was not his father, but rather Franklin Marshall Davis. There's just so much controversy surrounding this candidate for re-election to the presidency. Anyway, we've had another president in American history, one in the late 18th century, Chester Alan Arthur. His contribution to the English language was Arthurian, and that was because he had these mutton chop beard, and he served one term. He was the vice president who succeeded upon the death of James Garfield, who was assassinated. Arthur was claimed to be born in Vermont, although some of his critics claim he was actually born in Quebec, Canada, which borders Vermont. Anyway, he became the collector of the Port of New York, which was a major, major graft in those days. And I guess when he was slated on the Republican ticket to become vice president, and they won that election, he cleaned up his act. He served one term as president, and when he succeeded James Garfield. Among the other birthdays today, it's very interesting, one of the most interesting men in American politics, Earl Warren. He was of Scandinavian ethnicity. I think he was Norwegian originally. We've had other people of Scandinavian ethnicity like Orlando W. Wilson, who was also Scandinavian ethnicity. He was a colonel in the military police in the U.S. Army in World War II and in Nuremberg. He became a professor of criminology at the University of California, Berkeley, which is connected also to Earl Warren. Later, when they had the big Somerdale police scandal in Chicago in 1960 in Richard Daley I's administration, Daley decided he needed an outsider to clean up the Chicago Police Department, and he hired Orlando W. Wilson as head of a committee to do a nationwide search for a clean police chief who was competent, ethical, and honest. And they couldn't find anybody, and so they decided pick the guy who's chairing the committee, and that was Orlando Wilson, who did major reforms at the Chicago Police Department, including moving out the office which was in City Hall, which is right next to the mayor's office. He moved it over to police headquarters on South State Street. But anyway, Earl Warren, he was Attorney General of California, became Governor of California during World War II. He was one of the people, politicians, urging Roosevelt to evacuate the West Coast of the Japanese, and because he considered them a threat. He later regretted that. In 1948, he was slated as the vice presidential candidate for Dewey, who was running for the second time for president of the United States. They were both defeated. Then Eisenhower, a deal was made when Eisenhower got the nomination in 1952, the Eisenhower-Nixon ticket. When Fred Vinson died, who was the Chief Justice, Dwight Eisenhower needed to pick somebody. So who did he pick? Earl Warren. So Earl Warren had a fabulous career. He served as a soldier in World War I, Attorney General of California, Governor of California, Vice Presidential candidate, and then Chief Justice of the United States. Fascinating man. And his grandson, James Warren, was one of the judges in the Steve Neri Kangaroo Court case that occurred during Fleet Week in 1999 here in San Francisco. We'll get into that another day. Among the other birthdays today was Robert Goddard, who was considered the father of American rocketry. Ray Kroc, if you had your McDonald's today, or have you had your McDonald's? I'll get into a fascinating story about Ray Kroc. My father knew him. He didn't buy stocks. I worked briefly in the first McDonald's in Des Plaines, Illinois, and how McDonald's was set up in Des Plaines, Illinois. It originally was named the McDonald Brothers in San Bernardino, California. And I'll get into that story another day. Joshua Logan, Broadway producer, he produced South Pacific. We had Alan London, if you watch Password on TV, great English actor, Donald Pleasance. His daughter is also an actress. Glennis Johns, she has a very unusual, almost a contralto voice. She was born in South Africa, another actress. Philip Berrigan, a Jesuit who left the priesthood and became a far-left activist and was involved in the Chicago 7 1969 trials in the federal court in Chicago for the disruption and the Days of Rage in Chicago, which I think involved William Ayers. Here's an actress. She had an unusual voice also. Born in Australia, Diane Cilento. She was the one-time wife of Sean Connery at 007. And the guy who tried to do charitable aid for Africa, World Aid, Bob Geldof. His birthday is today. Among the interesting birthdays was Louis Brandeis. He was the first Jewish ethnic appointed by the president, it was Wilson, to the U.S. Supreme Court. He died in 1941. In 1990, Meir Kahane, I believe he was a rabbi, he was kind of extremist, and he was assassinated by another Jewish ethnic. Young guy, too. Among the interesting events today, the War of 1812, America actually lost. But we did win some battles on the Great Lakes. And then in 1813, in Canada, was called the Battle of the Thames. The American Army, beat the British. In 1873, the Palace Hotel was set up here in San Francisco, and that was the site in 1922, Warren Harding was touring the United States and Canada. He stayed overnight in the Palace Hotel, and he died of a heart attack there. And it's still there today. It's a fine hotel. In 1945, the first radio program called Meet the Press started, and it later became a TV program, although some people are very angry the way the press has been acting, or those in what we call the corporate press and even the alternative press have not been acting like ethical journalists. They've been acting like propagandists. And we're seeing more and more of this. And in fact, there's a song by a rock star called Journalists Who Lie. Unfortunately, the music is too loud. I got a promo copy, but I will publish the lyrics because they're very accurate. In 1953, of course, Earl Warren was appointed Chief Justice of the United States, and there were people, because of the extreme liberal movement of the U.S. Supreme Court in decisions, there were people who, around the United States, who wanted to impeach Earl Warren, and there were a lot of signs in certain parts of the country which said, which shouted out, "Impeach Earl Warren." It never happened. 1970, and this is very relevant to the Mitt Romney's comment the other night that he liked Big Bird, but he was going to defund PBS. PBS became a network. Now, I have another connection to the NPR part of PBS. My radio mentor, Leo Cosmo Lee, started Western Public Radio. He was the first journalist to set up a studio to cover the presidential campaigns, and this one was in Kansas City, and Leo Lee went there and was broadcasting the presidential campaign. It was Ford campaign, and Leo did this for National Public Radio, and that was their first coverage of a presidential campaign. And Leo Lee later did set up Western Public Radio in Fort Mason in San Francisco, where I studied. And in 1970, we had this uproar in Quebec, back to Quebec again, where the separatists, and Pierre Trudeau was Prime Minister of Canada in the Liberal Party, and they kidnapped James Cross, who was British Trade Commissioner. They also kidnapped and assassinated a Quebec government official, and because of these terrorist outbreaks in north of our border, Pierre Trudeau put the province under martial law. It's the first time it happened in peacetime in North America, and the American Civil Liberties Union and other people were giving support to Quebecois who were opposed to the martial law imposition up there in Quebec. Quebec has always been problem child of Canada. My school teachers were, some of them were from Montreal and Quebec, and Quebec, as they said, and we learned bastardized French growing up in school. But they are also called the Blanc Nègre, the white niggers. That's their expression because of the way they've been abused by what they consider the English capitalists and the failures of the Roman Catholic Church to protect the special status of the French-speaking Canadians. And there were there was an agreement at a place called Meech Lake, and where they have two languages. It's a dual language country where French and English. You will see those signs when you visit Canada. They're all over. And in Quebec, the French is on top of the English. In more ways than one, I should say. The other night, in the so-called debate between Governor Mitt Romney, or former Governor Mitt Romney, and the current occupant of the White House, Barack Obama Davis, as some people have referred to him, they're really upset that he apparently lost his teleprompter or the earplug. We don't know. But anyway, Mitt Romney brought up, was a governor of Massachusetts. A predecessor of his was Calvin Coolidge. He was also born in Vermont. Calvin Coolidge became famous when he was governor because there was a Boston police strike, and he suppressed it. He put it down and won. And then he got slated to be the vice presidential candidate in the Harding ticket. When Harding died in the Palace Hotel in San Francisco, Calvin Coolidge succeeded, just as Chester Allen Arthur succeeded. And Calvin Coolidge was known as Silent Cal. He didn't say too much, but when he said things, people tended to listen. One of the things that should be that is relevant to what Mitt Romney was saying about taxes, Calvin Coolidge gave in this speech, his radio speech, a long time ago, and we have our audio copy, and we are going to play it again. Here goes. It's a speech on the importance of the national budget and what American citizens, how they should keep as much of the money that they earn, they should keep it.
The country needs every ounce of its energy to restore itself. The costs of government are all assessed upon the people. This means that the farmer is doomed to provide a certain amount of money out of the sale of his produce No matter how low the price to pay his taxes, the manufacturer, the professional man, the clerk must do the same from their income. The wage earner, often at a higher rate when compared with his earning, makes his contribution perhaps not directly, but indirectly in the advanced cost of everything he buys. The expenses of the government reach everybody. Taxes take from everyone a part of his earnings and force everyone to work for a certain part of his time for the government. When we come to realize that the yearly expenses of the governments of this country, the stupendous sum of about $7,500,000,000, we get $700,000,000, is needed by the national government and the remainder by local governments. Such a sum is difficult to comprehend. It represents all the pay of 5 million wage earners receiving $5 a day, working 300 days in the year. If the government should add $100 million of expense, it would represent 4 days more work of these wage earners. These are some of the reasons why I want to cut down public expense. I want the people of America to be able to work less for the government and more for themselves. I want them to have the rewards of their own industry. This is the chief meaning of freedom. Until we can reestablish a condition under which the earnings of the people can be kept by the people, we are bound to suffer a very severe and distinct curtailment of our liberty. These results are not fanciful. They are not imaginary. They are grimly actual and real, reaching into every household in the land. They take from each home annually an average of over $300, and taxes must be paid. They are not a voluntary contribution to be met out of surplus earnings. They are a stern necessity. They come first. It is only out of what is left after they are paid that the necessities of food, clothing and shelter can be provided, and the comforts of home secured, are the yearnings of the soul for a broader and more abundant life gratified. When the government effects a new economy, it grants everybody a life pension with which to raise the standard of existence. It increases the value of everybody's property and raises the scale of everybody's wages. One of the greatest favors that can be bestowed upon the American people is economy in government.
And that was from the archives. We have a lot of presidential speeches and the Nixon-Kennedy debates. Which is also interesting because, as a child, I vaguely remember that first debate, and Nixon lost it. He looked terrible. They said he had the flu. Of course, we now have Al Gore, who said who's trying to claim that Mr. O had was sick because of the height, the Denver height. It's a mile-high city. But there are people who think that Mr. Gore is on a different type of high. In any event, John Kennedy was the senator from Massachusetts, the junior senator. I think it was Leverett's so-called liberal. I think he was a senior senator. Anyway, he was running for he had the Democratic candidacy wrapped up, and Joe Kennedy helped do that. And, of course, it's now come out that Ted Sorensen may have been the ghost author for John Kennedy's book, Profiles in Courage. In any event, Kennedy came on. Not only was he younger and looked fresher, but I believe, and a lot of people who saw that debate and who see it again today, believe he won. Now, interestingly, Nixon in the fourth debate won that one, and he looked better. He got it together. He could have had the flu in the first debate. That's still never been nailed down. But the debate the other night between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama was reminiscent in many respects of the Kennedy-Nixon debate, or Nixon-Kennedy debate, and very similarities. Here we have two people from Massachusetts, although Mitt was born in Michigan, and then we had a member of the executive branch of government, president, there's controversy about that, Barack Obama. In the Kennedy-Nixon 1960 debate, we had Nixon, who was the vice president in the Eisenhower administration, and we had Kennedy, who was a U.S. senator. And, of course, Kennedy won the election by, I think, 10,000 votes, which were believed to be stolen in Illinois. Now, we'll get into that another day. I do remember that. In any event, we're going to see what happens in the second debate. And already we have the propaganda, media propagandists and spinmeisters already prepping Mr. O for the second debate. Now, these debates, so the University of Denver, I believe, is a Catholic college run by the Jesuits. And, of course, one of the problems with the Jesuits, they're the most powerful order in the Roman Catholic Church. The head of the Jesuit order is known as the Black Pope. Not because he's black. There's never been an African or Negro or whatever, or colored Jesuit. I don't know of any, frankly, who's run the Jesuit order, and it's headed out of the Vatican. In any event, the Jesuit order, here's a little bit of history. They run many colleges here in the United States, Fordham in New York. They have Canisius. They have Loyola of New Orleans, Loyola of Chicago. They have one at the University of Denver, and they also have a Loyola of down in Los Angeles. I don't think they have one in Hawaii. But anyway, the order was started by a Spanish soldier who was severely wounded in one of the Spanish wars, Ignatius of Loyola, and he decided to set up this order to, shall we say, wage war to win converts to the Roman Catholic Church in Christ. And the Jesuits, they're very well trained. They're very rigid. We used to have them for religious retreats, and we couldn't wait to get rid of them. 3 days was just too much with the Jesuits. But anyway, this is where those people are coming from. And also, the late Secretary of State, John Foster Dulles, who was Presbyterian, he had one son who was Protestant, who later converted to the Roman Catholic Church, became a Jesuit priest, and later was crowned a cardinal, or elevated to a cardinal. And if you want to see about something about cardinals, see the series called The Borgias. But remember, you might wreck your gut out, since pretty bloody, and the subtitle, The Original Crime Family, is very accurate. But anyway, it gives you a good insight into cardinals in the Roman Catholic Church and how things were operated. In any event, Dulles' son became a cardinal, and I think he was connected to Georgetown. Oh, I forgot, that's the other Catholic Jesuit-run institution, and it's also very powerful because of where it's located, and also the type of people that go there, whether it's their law school, although we have some corrupt people that have come out of that law school, but also its connection to the diplomatic corps and to the levers and the corridors of government. So there's a little history there. We'll be back Monday at 4 o'clock, and we hope to have part of the interview with Patrick Butler. Interestingly, I interviewed Butler on a tape. He's probably the foremost political journalist in Cook County, 50 years, and he knows a lot of people. He's interviewed a lot of people. And he remarked, he was an Obama supporter, and he remarked that had Barack spent less time around the University of Chicago, excuse me, whatever else he did, and spent more time at places where there was political debates around Chicago, he wouldn't have fumbled and looked as bad as he did the other night. So that's coming from somebody who was a Barack supporter, and he he's not optimistic about the outcome of the November election unless there's vote stealing. And there's a question that the American votes will be digitalized and sent to Barcelona, Spain to be tabulated. There will be no paper trail. Now, we're trying to find out if that accusation has come from several sources, many of them credible, and we are trying to find out just how accurate it is. He didn't know anything about it. We will end with our usual, I'm losing my voice again, excuse me, politics and poker, and also we'll have Otto Butz, who was a political scientist and president of Golden Gate University, a personal friend of mine, and he talked about political animal illusions. And we'll play that money because it's relative to political campaigns. So we'll end right now with politics and poker, our theme, and I hope I get my voice back. Excuse me. Where the heck is it? Here we go.
Say, Ben, want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, what to bet,
where to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrays.
Bet 'em.
Little trays, good as gold.
Raise your five.
I'll fall.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fanyachinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot!
Butler and our excerpts from it, and we will have updates on political animals, which will be excerpts from my book, and also any breaking news on this 37-year-old case of Oral Stewart, the U.S. Marine, 18-year-old U.S. Marine, whose battered body, nude body, was found in a condominium parking lot. And it was unidentified for 37 years, and he was recently identified by the tattoo on him, and his brother identified it. And, you know, something to set for tattoo. So we'll be back Monday at 4 p.m. This is Peter Paul Brazola. Go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AMICUSVERITAS. Good night.